six kicks.
These were the scenes in Wembley when Jordan Henderson opened the scoring for England in their 3-0 victory over Senegal. Beer, celebration, sweat. Oh, I bet you were wishing you were in the middle of that, Craig. Fantastic.
Coffee and everything.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley, and my new arch enemy, Frank LaBeouf, is here, because of course it will be LaBeouf against Thomas, shorts against trousers, age against beauty in the quarterfinals. Yes, exactly.
Oh. By the way, there's no better time during those celebrations to go to the bar.
Well,
because they're all talking about you. Right, quick, get there, go there now.
Alexis Nunes is with us, as is Nader Manua as well, to reflect on that victory for England. We'll be getting their views from Qatar in a moment. But overall, this was really this was weird from an England perspective, because it was easy. Once you open the scoring...
Yeah,
the first 30 minutes was rubbish, and you thought this is going to be like the USA game all over again.
By the way, the goal just transformed the game. And I don't just mean, oh, England are winning, that's it. I mean, transformed the performance, the belief. Because for the first, well, up until the goal, England, in a similar way to Holland, in a sense, that, you know, people say, oh, Holland sat in and soaked it up. No, Holland were poor in possession. That's why he made the changes at half-time. England were poor in possession. Harry Maguire giving it away. They couldn't get the ball out to the fullbacks. They couldn't get it into midfield. Senegal had high energy and were pressing and harrowing. And you know, they created those very good chances. So it wasn't... I mean, please, nobody tell me this was a plan for England to sit back and soak it up. England wanted to control this game. They couldn't. Pickford had to make saves. There was a handball on John Stones. I don't think it was a penalty, but it was one of those things, you know, it could happen. And then that brilliant, brilliant goal transformed England and deflated Senegal. It wasn't the way Southgate, in my opinion, would have pictured it. But once they got it, Dan, it was like a stranglehold. Yeah. Then we saw the England that I think we all know is in there.
It was like someone had just pulled the plug on Senegal. Yeah. Like any sort of energy, any sort of spark just disappeared.
Exactly. They lost their composure, their energy, everything. It was like, oh, we conceded a goal. Okay, we're dead. We're not gonna equalize and everything. And that was strange. And it's a little bit something that we've seen during that World Cup, where you miss a penalty or you miss a chance, and 10 minutes after the other team scores.
Yeah, it was a save from Pickford, wasn't it?
Exactly. The save from Pickford is a great save, because otherwise it would have been different. But we've seen that like a couple of times during that World Cup. But I never thought that Senegal will shut down in that way, because it was like half an hour. And we say, for the sake of that game, make sure England doesn't score just before halftime.
Yeah. Kane obviously.
The halftime one was brilliant. I mean, the halftime one was a killer. If the coach gets them back in at halftime at 1-0 and goes, you know, that's a punch in the nose and, you know, we have to deal with it then. Maybe we would have seen a different Senegal in the second half.
Maybe.
But no, Frank. Mm. And you can't deny the two goals England scored in the first half. The third goal, yes, brilliant. But the two goals they scored were absolutely brilliant. And, of course, we've sat in here and we talked about Bellingham. We talked about Foden.
Yeah.
We asked the question. You see, particularly Bellingham, you know, he's getting all the plaudits, and rightly so, but to have that strength and balance to get through those strong physical Senegalese players in the middle of the park, then play that pass that obviously to Foden and then to Kane, bang, game over.
Yeah.
It's just incredible, and England have got that talent at their disposal.
I love that picture between Anderson and Bellingham when they were all together.
That, we won't recreate it.
Yeah, the eldest. The eldest with the youngest. And you can imagine whatever you want, you know, like Anderson saying, you know, if you come to Liverpool next year, you know, we can give you passes like that, you know.
Yeah.
It would be like those kind of comments. But that was so good. At the beginning of the World Cup, after the first game of England, I said that for the first time, I feel there is a spirit in that squad. And this picture is exactly what I meant. That's really there is no differences between the eldest and the youngest. maybe there is 15 years different. I don't know how many, but it's like they are one. So they become strong when they need it. They fight together, and it's great to see.
Let's go to Alexis and Nadim. Is it concerning, though, guys, that it took them 35 minutes really to get going in this game? Because against more superior opposition, like, for example, France on Saturday, they're not going to let you get away with it.
Yeah, Dan, you know, I think you could definitely have cut the tension in this Al Bayt Stadium, I suppose, in those minutes then, Nadim, because everyone actually saw that Senegal, even though they didn't have as many chances at first as England did, they were looking dangerous when they finally got on the ball, and you feel like if they just got on the end of those chances, they probably would have been a different game.
Yeah, for sure, but, you know, this is the way football works. If you don't sort of capitalise on the opportunities that you have, then this is the way a game can be. And for me, looking up from up high down onto the field, it was
in hospitality.
Anyway,
so because Nadim was in hospitality, guys. He wasn't
anyway,
in the media
so as I was saying, the key thing for me was for England in that first 30 minutes, they were moving the ball side to side, but they didn't really have much penetration. And as well as that, they weren't really trying to stretch the game in behind. I think there were times when Saka wouldn't necessarily run in behind, Foden wouldn't run in behind. And so as a consequence for Senegal, everything was kind of in front of them. So even though defending is never really that easy, it's easier when you don't have to turn and run back towards your own goal. And I think there was a stoppage in play for a while. And I saw Jordan Henderson go over to the sideline. And maybe at this point, some information was given over, because literally 2 minutes later, there was a point where I think he received the ball from John Stones and he wanted to play around the corner high to Saka, who didn't go. And I watched as he berated Saka, saying, "You have to go, you have to go, you have to go." And then from that point, they start to make more runs in behind. They start to be more dynamic with and without the ball. And I think that's where, for me, those two goals kind of came from, through sort of dynamic movements and really trying to play on the shoulder just that little bit more. And then obviously the timing of the second goal was key, because that's essentially what happened in the Netherlands game as well for them when Daley Blind scored. And, you know, this isn't the best version of Senegal because they have key players missing. But in the second half, Senegal tried to switch the formation a little bit, almost match up with England in midfield. Because in the first half, looking at it, they only had two central midfielders and they kind of left four high. Now they tried to go for a three, but what chance have you got when you concede that early? But I think in the second half, but I think for England, they were more aggressive in terms of how they were trying to stretch the game, how they were not shy in terms of trying to go for territory over possession at times, and really applying the pressure. And in the end, it was a comfortable performance for them in that second half. But they did have to weather some sort of storm, but I think credit deserves to go to them because they made the adjustment. And when they make those sorts of adjustments with the players that they have, you know, I think they can be a very dangerous side. And obviously playing against France will be a tough game. But even though they showed weakness, I think other teams have done as well. Yeah. And the strengths in which they have, if they can manage to sort of manifest those in that game, I think it should be a fantastic quarterfinal.
And I know that, of course, in your hierarchy of needs or your favourite things, there's your family first, of course.
Yes.
And then there's Jordan Henderson.
Yeah,
he, of course, scored that goal today. But what a play from Jude Bellingham.
Yes.
He's really impressed everybody so far this World Cup. But for you, who's been the impact player for England? Has it been him?
I think Jude Bellingham, throughout that first 30 minutes, I thought he was one of England's better players. I think there were a few who were probably a bit quiet. Like, overall, Saka scored, but I didn't think he had the best of games as well. But Bellingham was trying to drive. He was trying to really take it to the Senegalese. He was putting himself about. He was trying to make passes. He was trying to run with the ball. And it was great because, you know, England have been accused of being quite negative. But then here's a goal where 1-8 breaks into the box and cuts it back for the other number 8. And that's, you know, that's kind of what you want to see. You want them to be dynamic. And I think they've got a really good balance with that, with Rice sitting in the 6 as well. So I think Bellingham has been incredible, and you see the way they celebrate. And as Frank said, you know, you can feel the sort of team, sort of like chemistry and atmosphere that is there. But I think it's been there for now a couple of tournaments. I think when I see the way that they play today, again, they were not perfect, but you can see that they were doing things together. They had an understanding of what they needed to do. They understood their own job and how their job works in with the overall picture. So for England, you know, not everybody will fancy them, but they'll fancy themselves because they've kind of been here before.
Yeah.
And going into this game against France, maybe they are the underdog. But maybe that unity will be the thing which gets them across the line potentially. And yeah, as I say, it's going to be a fantastic game.
And I'm sure we can regret a lot of things, and a lot of teams can regret some notable absentees. Sadio Mane for Senegal, of course, we have no doubt that he is the heartbeat of that team, that core of that team as well. I almost want to say, would it have been a different game? But how much do you think of a difference he would have made?
Yeah, it would have made a big difference. Yeah. You know, this is somebody that was on the shortlist for the Ballon d'Or. I think any time you can have somebody like that in your team, it's going to be very, very significant. But I think also missing Gay in midfield, you know, that definitely did affect them. Yeah. I think even when you look at that, though, England probably would potentially overmatch them. But I think the game would be different. And, you know, they tried to make changes at halftime to try and arrest some of the issues in which they had. But ultimately, it just didn't work out for them. And it's a disappointment for them. But overall, as they look at this year, you know, they're African champions for the very first time. And as a consequence, you know, there's a sense of disappointment to losing to England.
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, they are still a very good side and have had a very good year.
Is it coming home?
Oh. I'm going home. I'll say
that instead. But is it? Is football coming?
I might need to readdress my bracket. Yeah.
Oh, Dan, he's trying to sit on the fence with this one. What about you, Dan? Is it coming home from what you saw?
Not yet, Alexis. We're not at that stage of excitement. Let's calm everything down a little bit.
They're not allowed to go to Shakai Slop Studio anymore.
They've been kicked out. They've just come from the game, haven't they?
Oh, right.
Because
Shakai is coming to Qatar, maybe he put them out.
He's taken over the stadium. you look at the individual performances, and obviously they mentioned Jude Bellingham, 19 years of age. It's a bit special, isn't it, to have that sort of confidence on this stage to do that.
You know, I was looking at Musiala's performances. If we compare similar physiques in the sense, similar league, both playing for big clubs, obviously Bayern Munich are ahead of Dortmund, that's obvious. And I was thinking, watching him, how he slithers away from people in tight spaces and how effective he's been for Germany and Bayern, that maybe he was a little step ahead of Bellingham. But I think I've had to rethink that, just purely on how he handled himself in this game. I think the best thing that could ever happen for that young boy leaving Birmingham at 16 years old, about it, not going to London or, you know, an hour down the road, going to Germany. And I think it's the greatest thing, and kudos to his family if they were saying to him, listen, this is a life lesson to you. Get away. You're going to grow up fast. And the other side of the coin is, I think he's got much more game time in the Bundesliga coming into this World Cup.
Yes.
And, you know, all these games he's had for England than he ever would have done had he gone to Liverpool, United, City. Yes, he would have got games. But one thing we can criticise the Bundesliga in a sense about, you know, well, we're not criticised, but we can sort of observe Bayern Munich's domination. But the one thing we can't deny is they've been a great platform for a lot of young players, American players, Jude Bellingham, and I think we saw that today.
Gareth Southgate has been in some quarters, like, for example, when we talk about England's run under him over the last couple of tournaments, he said that, he had the easier side of the bracket, he didn't have to beat anyone.
Yeah. I don't think Senegal were easy.
Right.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I really don't. Nedim touched on it, you know, Idrissa Gueye, Sadio Mane. I mean, Idrissa Gueye in there, you know, in the midfield, in the engine room. And I don't think Senegal are easy, and we saw that. However, we are going to effectively... We're not going to learn about England. We know they're a really good side. But the French have already proven it time and time again with the odd blip, Frank, that they can handle the pressure of the big moment. England's big one was the Euros.
Mm-hmm.
It was a slim failure, but it was failure on penalties. Before that, it was the semi-final. It was a poor performance. If they step it up, and we know they can, against the French, then I think we'll all have to sit back and go, hey, this is the real deal.
We'll be looking ahead.
At the same time, it's a test for France, because I've been carried away by the tête-à-tête between Anderson and Jude Bellingham.
Right.
It's Jude Bellingham who made a pass to an assist to Anderson and not the other way around. Sorry about that.
Can I say something quickly before, Harry Kane, right, I know he's not, that was his first goal. If England had won 5-0 today and Harry Kane hadn't scored, I'd have been sitting here going, what a performance.
Right.
And I think the thing is with him for me is, and people may disagree, I don't think at the moment there is a better natural number 9 who both scores goals and can go into midfield and pass the football almost like a Steven Gerrard, Ray Wilkins, a Glenn Hoddle. His range of passing for a strike. I mean, people say, well, Benzema, Lewandowski. Yeah, I mean, that's a different debate. Are they better strikers? Probably. But can they go back in and pass it? Yes. But we've seen him go back in for club and country and play raking 60-yard balls over the top, balls around the corner.
True.
Get turned, slide people in. That's a great facet to have if your striker's not scoring.
Yeah, mentioned, of course, he did score. And what was interesting, when you saw that it was Kane one-on-one with the keeper, you knew. You knew it was going to end up in the back.
Yeah, even if you know it's Mendy in front of him, and sometimes, you know, you feel that you can be confident about the guy, he's going to save it. But Kane is so accurate in front of the goal. He doesn't think too much. He knows what he has to do. He knows that he has to pull the ball a little bit in the air, but not too much. Strong shot. And that's perfect, and nothing you can do about it. The guy is a masterpiece, yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. There is a time for everybody to realize that England has maybe one of the best strikers.
Think about Harry Kane playing for Tottenham. How many times in those positions do you see Harry Kane? Okay, he might miss. How many times do you see him ballooning it high over the bar? He might miss, but a lot of time, you watch him, he strikes it low and hard and generally for the
corner. And how many times he came back in the middle to serve Son? You know, to go back, to turn and to serve some.
So we saw that again today.
Yeah, and we did see some negatives as well in that England defence, and we'll discuss them a little bit later on as we look ahead to France against England. This was the reaction after the Harry Kane goal as well. Something flying around there.
They don't have beers anymore.
Yep.
Somebody's smoking a big cigar. A gigantic cigar.
They are two.
Well, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. We know that it will be England against France in the quarterfinal. That's after France beat Poland by 3-1. A comfortable victory, really, for the defending champions. Mbappe, sensational throughout this game as we welcome Julien Laurent to the show. Jules, I'm going to start with the World Cup winner first.
Right, what?
Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Look, Mbappe, we know how brilliant he is, and scoring goals against Poland doesn't make him any more better, but he just shows time and time again how special a talent.
Today, every time he had the ball, and I have to say that Cash had a great game. That's the thing.
Right.
Yeah. He had a great game. He tried to do his best. He tried to be helped by his teammates. But what do you want to do against that guy with such a power, such a technique, such a cleverness as well? As Mbappe had today. I mean, it's impossible to cop. You know, he sees everybody before everybody, and it's amazing. You know, I saw that because it's the world of stats now that Messi scored 9 goals in all of his career in the World Cup, and Ronaldo 8, and he's already at 9-2.
Yeah.
I mean, what he does in his career, he's a baby, as you said, Craig, but the baby had a very good game today, and he helped France. He's not the only one. I'm a little bit concerned defensively, but I just want to name somebody because we don't talk about, or two guys, Tchouaméni and Rabiot, during that World Cup. You know, we thought without Kanté and Pogba it would be a problem.
You did.
Yes, I did. Well, we play collectively, you know. But I really thought that it could be an issue. But those two, they're doing the job very well.
It's like Jules basically Nadum against the rest of you when you have these friendly games, isn't it? He's just at a different level.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. I mean, I was at the stadium and it was a Kylian masterclass, really, in the sense that the assist for the first goal for Giroud is amazing to start with. And he's added that. Craig was talking about Kane and how he's in number 9 and number 10. Kylian, for a long time, was all about goals. And now I think he's adding slowly to his game this ability of passing the ball as well, to have a clear picture of how the pitch is and that awareness, and then just slotting the ball like he did for Giroud tonight. And then the two finish are exceptional. The first one, everybody expects the curler, and instead I think he surprises Chesney by the way he hits it. The second one is the curler. Everybody expects the curler. It's the curler and he still goes in. He's unstoppable when he plays like this. And we said when Karim got injured that Kylian felt the need of saying, okay, this is going to be my stage now. This is going to be my World Cup, and I'm going to take this team and carry. And there's still issues in that team in terms of defensively. Frank mentioned it a little bit, the two fullbacks. There's a lot of things that could get better. But when Kylian is in that kind of form, you can take on anyone. You can beat anyone. You can even go all the way and winning another World Cup.
I think nobody right now, and we are big players in that World Cup.
Yeah.
Nobody can make a difference like Mbappe is doing right now. Every time he has the ball, do you feel the danger?
Yes.
That's unbelievable. Now, because there is a game on Saturday, if you have somebody like Walker, who can be as fast as him, that would be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, we'll talk about the game in more detail in a moment. Just but overall, the quality of the finishing for some.
I go back to what Frank said. Matty Cash will be in back in hotel going, I had a pretty good game tonight. The guy I was playing against is man of the match.
Yeah,
scored 2 goals, had an assist. What was the question again?
The quality of those two finishes in particular.
I mean, it's just. This is what This is how we like to talk about them.
Yes.
I don't like, to be honest with you, the PSG sort of away from histrionics, all that. So maybe that's a consequence of some of the people he's playing with. But the only one thing I would say about France, in a sense, was that I did get a feeling at times during that game that they were almost trying to look, they were looking for Mbappe all the time. And we'll see how that pans out against England. But yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the game, but I mean, it is going to be a great matchup. And he is, at the moment, in this World Cup, unplayable.
Right.
He's just unplayable at the moment. He's popping up in all these different areas. You look at the third goal, there was no space. And then he just drops his shoulder, lets it run across his body, bang, top corner.
A year ago, he never in his head he thought giving the ball to Olivier Giroud. And it's where he improved as well, his game, is the good control that he makes and how he sees the space to give the ball to Olivier Giroud for a fantastic assist. Because yes, it's hard for Giroud to score because the control of his ball is not fantastic because he has to come from behind him. But the pass from Mbappe is so accurate, so well thought. I mean, that's a real improvement from Mbappe in his game.
That goal for Giroud, of course, made him the all-time leading goal scorer in French history, making it 52 over Thierry Henry over 51. Here we go, Jules. You can just wax lyrical for a while because we know how much you love Olivier Giroud.
I just think it's an incredible achievement, really, for him to get to that amount of goals scored for the national team, 117 caps. So the ratio of games played and goals scored is pretty impressive as well. But we go back to the thing. He's someone who no one really believed in him when he was younger. He didn't go to an academy. He kept being rejected. No one really wanted to take him on. And he had to work hard and go through all the lower leagues, the fourth division, the third division, the second division, and then finally in Ligue 1, and then in England, of course. To make it, to come to the top. And I think for that, he deserves a lot of credit. He's 36 years old, and for him to beat that record, it's Thierry Henry we're talking about. You know, it's not like a random dude. It's Thierry that he's beaten the record. And yeah, he might not hold the record for long because Griezmann is not too far behind, and then Kylian is coming really, really fast. But still, right now, he's the top goal scorer in French football history, which is, again, incredible considering where he started when he was 17 or 18.
I think the French population needs to give him a little bit more respect to what he achieved in his life, where he's been very criticized by the medias and the French population. I think he deserves all the credit for all his career. It's a real lesson of life that he's giving to all young lads who want to be football players. Never give up. That's what he is.
Oh, that's a nice sentiment.
Well, I mean, the other side of the coin is there's a lot of snobbery out there with players like this. Everybody thinks it has to be a Messi or Ronaldo. Everybody thinks it has to be the most skillful player in the world. People are quick to shoehorn these big 6 foot, what is he, 6'3", 6'4"?
Something like that.
These big players into some shoebox of target men. That's all he is. We're going to lump the ball up to him. He's going to head it down. We can get around him, throw it up to Olivier. There's a lot more to his game than that. There has been for years and years and years. We saw it at Arsenal, little flicks around the corner, you know, holding the ball up, nice left
today
foot.
Today he had a bicycle. I mean, I don't know why the ref gave him a free kick.
Yeah, when he blew the whistle. So, I mean, it is, bear in mind, playing for France. It's not playing for some country, with all respect, where they're handing caps out like confetti.
Sure.
There's competition for places, albeit Benzema's not been around. Terrific achievement.
And that, of course, then sets up France against England on Saturday in the quarterfinals. According to the bookies, France are favourites to advance to the final four.
Are you going to the doctors on Friday? Because I think you're going to have to go to the doctors for some sort of tablets.
No, I think it's all right because my expectations are quite low going into that game.
Hold on.
Be all right.
Humble guy.
French fancy, says the back page of the Star. Bring on the French. The Mirror. People are getting excited now. Meanwhile, weekend.
Bravo, very good
indeed. Let's get the temperature, shall we, from the fans who are at the game looking ahead to the clash.
Come on, England!
All right, well, I have a massive question for you then. Is it coming home?
Yay!
Oh, yes, it's coming home.
Game by game.
So you're the reasonable one, not getting ahead of yourself.
Common sense, yeah. Let's see, yeah.
What about you? Is it coming home?
Oh, definitely, yes. Absolutely.
Of course.
Oh, it's always coming home. This is the year.
Oh, it's coming home this time. I'm 67. I've waited 52 years for this.
France in the quarterfinals. Now a man by the name of Kylian Mbappe. How do England stop him?
Easy. I would just run right past him.
dead easy.
Look, we're looking strong. It's early to say, but what, quarters now? If we can make it past France, definitely. Then well, yeah, we're on for a final one.
Kylian Mbappe, nerves?
Not at all.
Why not?
Easy. Kyle Walker's got him.
In his back pocket.
In his back pocket.
Mbappe's finished. Maguire is gonna like destroy him. Maguire, boom. Mbappe dead. Mbappe, watch.
Mbappe's in Maguire's pocket.
Yeah.
Maguire pulling Mbappe out of his pocket.
Mbappe does not have a chance.
Argentina in the final. We'll win.
It's coming home. It's coming home.
It's coming. Football's coming home.
They've never ever met England and France in the knockout stages of a major tournament. Only in the group stages, go back to Euro 2012, where it was a draw. 2004, where France won by 2-1. Let's welcome in, shall we? Julien Laurent with us, as is Alexis.
I love the first one there.
Maiden.
The first guy. It's bloody coming home. Bloody right it is. Put kettle on.
Oh, fair play. Alexis, they seem to be genuinely optimistic, which surprises me.
Yeah, Dan, I was a little bit surprised. I only saw or heard from one fan that was the voice of reason that said, calma, calma, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Because as we said, Nadim, it is Kylian Mbappe and France. And yes, England have looked impressive up to here. They've only conceded the 2 goals. But Kylian Mbappe is a player of a different caliber. And as the guys were talking, him accepting this role to lead France, this is a match that he lives for, isn't it? How do England stop him?
Yeah, I think that is the case. But for as much as he could be a game winner, it's not a guarantee to say that that's what he will do. Mm. I think for France as well, they have to be able to defend well. And, you know, speaking with Julien, we spent a lot of time together. And before
that.
Yeah, sorry. But before the tournament started, you know, he was telling me about some of the potential issues that, say, France have. Maybe there's a little bit of an issue defensively. So Mbappe, I think, has done really well in the tournament. But I think some of that comes because he's playing like alongside Theo Hernandez. Mm. I think the way that they work together down that left-hand side is very, very significant. It's the prominent part of their attack. But I think Julien would say himself, Hernandez isn't the best defensively. So there is the other side to the game where, you know, the assumption will be that they just bomb forward, bomb forward, bomb forward. But it's a two-way game. Yeah. So I think some France do have some weaknesses. But in Mbappe, you know, he's without a doubt one of the quickest players in world football. There are probably one or two that may be quicker than him. I personally don't think Kyle Walker is that. So when somebody says it'll be in the back pocket, I'm not so sure about that. But for me, in terms of the strategy that sort of England will take forward in terms of trying to exploit the weaknesses that they have, then it's great. You know, it makes for a very, very good match. Mbappe will likely be the best player on the field. That's fine. Mm. But it doesn't mean that France are definitely going to win because of it, because England have their own ideas, they have their own strategy. And if they want to be able to defend against Mbappe, you need to defend against Mbappe and those other people around him. And I think, in fairness to Gareth Southgate and to the players, I think some of the British press or the English press were very quick at saying that England are getting ready for France and are disregarding Senegal.
Yeah.
But I think for the way that management is and those players are, it's one game at a time, and they'll be really focusing in on making sure they do the good job.
The English press getting ahead of themselves? Not very like them.
It was, yeah, listen, it was ridiculous. I had to speak somewhere today, and they were talking about how you shouldn't play Kyle Walker in this game because you need to rest him for the France game. And I was like, it felt embarrassing to even be discussing something like that.
Not like England fans or supporters to get ahead
of themselves. I must say, sorry to jump in, but most of the England fans I've seen here have been perfectly reasonable. I don't know if that's to do with the alcohol, but they've been perfectly...
Or the lack thereof.
Yes, but they've been perfectly reasonable. And it's good to see them positive, because I think it's very easy to sort of be very negative about that England side. But for now, people went to the game. They were a bit bored in the first 20-30.
Yeah.
But come the end of it, they very much enjoyed it.
So England basically have everything it takes, even defensively, to deal with France.
Well, I think that it's a game between two imperfect sides, and as a consequence, you know, there are going to be little details that will make the difference. And France are the reigning champions, but England are a side who feel supremely confident because they kind of understand what they need to do to win games these days. So I think, as I say, I keep saying it, but I think it's going to be a fantastic game and arguably one of the best ones of the tournament, I predict.
A game between two imperfect sides, Dan. Sounds almost poetic, doesn't it?
Certainly does, coming from you, Alexis. Thank you very much. Looking at it,
I honestly think it's a lot. I don't see the negativity any in this England team. I don't. Okay, maybe the fans were talking about Harry Maguire. You don't want that matchup, really. You don't want him isolated with Mbappe. Going back to Walker, you know, he's a wee bit older and he's had his injury problem, but he's still quick. However, you know, you still fancy Mbappe if he's isolated. But I would be super. I don't understand your negativity.
Mbappe is the problem, isn't it?
Because you feel if Mbappe brings...
But so is Kane the problem and Foden's the problem. That's how you got to look at it.
They're not the same level, though, is it? That's the thing.
No. But maybe England have got a little bit more about their armoury.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Griezmann's not had the greatest season.
Right.
All right, Olivier Giroud has now broke the record. Would you take Giroud over Harry Kane? Don't think so. Mbappe is the difference. For me, this game is a super, super tight game, particularly after what I saw from England today going forward. I don't think it's now a difficult decision. We know Raheem Sterling's gone back to the UK for the time being to deal with personal matters. We don't know what that situation is.
Yeah.
However, I don't think it's a difficult decision for Gareth Southgate, all things being equal fitness-wise, what his front line is going to be.
Would you play the same starting 11 that played against Senegal?
I would, yes.
Right.
I would, yes. I'd play the same back four, and I would play that midfield because it's got a little bit of everything in it. And I don't see... Yeah, and I heard the argument for Marcus Rashford. For me, I thought Saka was always going to play.
Right.
I thought it was Foden or Rashford, and I didn't know which way he was going to go. He chose the right way. I don't think that will change for the French game.
I think he shouldn't, because I think they showed that they work well together. The fact that Foden started the game and showed his talent and did two assists today.
Yes.
Proved that he should play and should carry on. I think they're strong enough in the middle of the park. It was funny to see the young guys, talking about Maguire putting Mbappe in his pocket. Well, I'm not sure about that. But I remember a game, City against Paris Saint-Germain, where Walker was really on top of Mbappe for those games, where Mbappe couldn't cope with the pace of Walker, couldn't make the difference, which is huge when you have to compete against Mbappe. But Mbappe, of the game that I saw, with Mbappe that we see now, is a different Mbappe.
Right.
Now, again, I agree with Craig. I think it's going to be a tight game because the two offensive lines are really the assets of the two teams. Defensively, they're both struggling and they both make mistakes, and we see every game chances for the other. The Polish, there are chances before the first goal of Giroud, a big chance, and this was the same for England against Senegal. So it's guessing that it's going to be easy for France or the other way around, that football is coming home, that's being a little bit too optimistic.
I think we can ban that for the moment. Yeah. I think that's okay.
Be humble like French people a little bit in England.
Jules?
This England team worries me, I won't lie. I think it's such a talented team. And that's one of the things that we haven't mentioned is the depth in the squad. Because you can change your front three or suddenly your two wingers so easily. You can bring on Maddison, for example, who hasn't played yet. You can play Foden as a 10 and just go, if you're behind, and just go with Rice and Bellingham or Rice and Henderson or Bellingham and Henderson. Southgate has so many options. And as you know, I don't really like Southgate. I don't really rate him. But the talent that he has is incredible. And it's a better squad than the French. It's a team right now that has a better collective than the French. Because we still rely, there's a dependence on Kylian. Clearly, like there's a dependence on Messi for Argentina. England don't have that. There's no a Kane dependence. There's no a Bellingham dependence. There's no a Foden dependence. We have a Kylian dependence. I don't know if Kylian is not on a good day, I'm not really sure how the rest of the team reacts. I think England have weaknesses, of course. And if you force Foden and Saka to defend, for example, it will help. If you put pressure on Stones and Maguire, I think it will help as well. But they really worry me, I have to be honest here.
I think what they'll try and do is Walker will try and really push in and smother Mbappe.
Mm. Okay.
Right, now the question then is that will he be able to spin in behind and France be able to find that ball? But I think he'll go in as high up the pitch as possible because he's not worried about his pace. He might not match him, Mbappe's not going to leave Walker for 5 yards.
Sure.
Might leave him for half a yard. So he can afford to squeeze in on him. He's then got John Stones on the right side, not Harry Maguire. So they're two Man City teammates. They can sort of work with that. And the other side of the coin is for Harry Maguire, if he stays away from that sort of confrontation, is that the Stones and Maguire partnership don't have to worry about another striker who's going to run away from you. Yes, he's going to front up,
right?
Olivier Giroud. But you know what you're going to get. He's not going to spin in behind and run away, as unfit as Harry Maguire is. So it's going to be an intriguing battle in there, but I don't think Walker will set off and say, right, here, get turned at me and run at me, and I'll back myself. He's going to try and stop him getting turned.
That's what World Cup's about, isn't it? Two of the biggest teams going head-to-head. It's fantastic. Let's get some predictions. Nadim, Alexis?
Oh, this is a tough one to call. Oh, my days. You go first.
So I was very wrong about the USA. So
I was very wrong as well.
I was very wrong about that one. And I had France going through against England. But I'll reverse it. I'll say England. I think England going to win. How much?
How many goals are we seeing?
I'm going to say it is 2-1 to England.
I was also going to go 2-1 as well. And I think I'm going to go 2-1 despite the Marcus Rashford on my shirt right now. I'm going to say 2-1 France.
Of course you'd say that.
Just because I need Frank to invite me to his fancy house in Normandy. Oh. France, Jules, I'm going with you guys. 2-1 France.
Wow, Jules.
I mean, the heart says France, of course. 2-1, two goals by Kylian. And the head says... an England win, 1-0.
Wow. Double bluff, surely. What do you reckon?
Well, I want to say...
Canada and Denmark in the semi-finals.
I was right today. I was right yesterday. Don't worry. The curse is over.
I just want to know
that Alexis is invited whenever she wants, you know, in Normandy. I think I will go for a draw.
Okay.
2-2, something like that.
Wow.
And France wins... on penalties.
I'm going to go for a super exciting game.
And nil-nil.
And I'm going to go... I love what I've seen from Mbappe, but I love more what I saw from the play between 3, 4 and 5 players in that England team.
Wow.
With, as Julian said, with possibilities off the bench, and I'm going to go for 3-2 to England.
Wow, my goodness. We will say thank you very much to
your prediction,
to Alexis.
So that's the Scottish bluff.
Come on, the roast beef. Save the
pot you're going for.
France win 10-0. The latest edition of the Gavin Jones podcast, always worth listening to. Be sure to check that out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Lionel Messi dominating the headlines right across the world, from Spain to Argentina, of course, being a key part of their victory yesterday. 1,000, does that say goals or games? 1,000 games.
Goal involvement.
1,122 goal involvements. That means, of course, assist or goals.
Is that the new terminology?
What's this now?
That's the shirt that he swapped that he gave
yes,
to somebody.
With Jason Cummings. Oh, yeah. He plays for Hearts, doesn't he, I believe?
He
used to play in Scotland.
No, he plays in Scotland.
Yeah, I think he plays.
He plays for Hibernians. I think he plays for Hibernians.
No, he used to play in Scotland. He plays in Australia now.
Oh, there we go.
I believe.
All right then. Well, that's not really the main talking point.
That's just nice from him.
It is all about Lionel Messi. So welcome in Pablo Zabaleta to the show. Pablo, a big sigh of relief, I imagine, from Argentina yesterday. And you must have been delighted to see your friend Messi put in that sort of performance.
Absolutely. What a, incredible numbers for Messi. 1,000 games, unbelievable. And another great performance from Messi, of course, especially in the second half. I've been at the stadium. It was brilliant to see Messi playing like that. It seems like he's really enjoying it. He knows that probably his last World Cup, and he's carrying Argentina so well in this tournament. And it's a joy to watch. I mean, the fans at the stadium, they're really excited when he's on the ball. He's playing well, so we're still relying so much on this guy. So hopefully he can continue playing that way. That would be brilliant to see Messi going far in this World Cup and hopefully got a chance to be in the finals. I know many people in Qatar, that they were supporting their teams, but they say, if we cannot win it, I want Argentina to win because of Messi. So you can see the influence of Messi in football, and particularly in this World Cup.
Pablo, what was interesting yesterday, I thought, and we've seen it really throughout Argentina's matches, that when they're playing, the atmosphere in the stadium just seems to go up another gear. What was it like to be there?
Yeah, it's been brilliant, Dan, believe me. A lot of Argentinians in Qatar, and especially in the games, so you can see a lot of fans just bouncing, and it was like 30,000 probably fans at the stadium. Yesterday, they go like an hour before the game. They stay for another hour after the game, just singing. It's been brilliant, believe me. It's great to see the fans enjoying as well. A lot of excitement. The expectation is high for that team. So, yeah, it's been great so far. The atmosphere in the stadium's been unbelievable.
The first quarterfinal then will, of course, see the Netherlands take on Argentina. Argentina 7-4 on to advance. They've met 5 times in the past, including Pablo in 2014. They drew 0-0, of course, with the Dutch. Argentina advancing on penalties. You didn't take a penalty, Pablo. Lazy. taking a look at the...
No chance.
Take a look at the opponent. How concerned
are... Do you know what, Dan?
In that
penalty take a list, I think the kidman was ahead of me in that list for the penalties in 2014.
Pab, looking at it, how concerned are you about the Dutch?
Well, listen, they had a good team. I think last game against USA, they've been really good. They have good players. I think they've been improving in this World Cup from the first game of the opening game in their group against Qatar, Ecuador, and Senegal. I think they are a better team. They play with 3 at the back, with 2. Wing backs that they've been really good last game, Dumfries and Blind. So both strikers, Depay and Gakpo, been also really good. They both score goals. The runs in behind, and I think Argentina will be probably the first game for them that they will be probably a bit tested, defensively. At the moment, for Argentina, they play against teams that they sit deep. And they were always waiting for counter-attack and opportunities, and this probably will be completely different against this Netherlands team, that they have more quality players, that they've been playing in a different way, they're more offensive, and we'll see how Argentina can cope with this attacking player of Holland.
How do you see this one?
Well, everybody's frightened of everybody at this point of the competition, aren't they, really, because the sides are close. I'm slightly concerned for Argentina here now. I mean, this is a big step up, although the Dutch haven't been great. They're super well organised. They're gaining confidence as they go along. Van Dijk's looking like the assured player that has been at Liverpool for a while. They've got some changes to make off the bench. And, you know, yeah, it was a great result for Argentina, but come on. It was little old Australia, wasn't it, who were, had a great World Cup. But really, look at where the player pool is coming from.
Yeah.
You know, guys that are playing... OK, there's the odd one playing at a good level, but guys that have been playing in Scotland, guys that are playing in Australia in the A-League, you know, this is a just different step up. And I actually think... If, and this is a big if, they can figure Messi out, and that is a big if, I think there are a lot of holes in this Argentina side for the Dutch to exploit.
And Pablo, we've seen it before, and you mentioned the reliance on Messi. Why is it going to be different this time round?
Well, just because obviously we know that Messi's the one who, when the game, you know, when the opponent is just defending so deep, I mean, it's so difficult to find the space in between lines, and we saw that it was hard to play through balls the middle. We needed to go wide. We didn't have Di Maria in the last game, and it seems like always Messi has to come deep to get the ball, and then play some long balls in behind for someone who makes the run from the second line, or at least when Messi can find an empty space and get the ball inside the box or from the edge of the box and have a shot himself and score a goal. That's the only way that at the moment we have seen of that Argentina team playing against Australia, Poland, Mexico. So probably against Holland now would be different because they're more offensive. They will probably, Argentina can find more space in between line, and we can find Messi in those pockets in that final third where probably he can be more dangerous, and hopefully, you know, we can see a game like that, because I don't really see Holland choose defending the whole game because they have players to play a better football.
I just want to go back just to France-England for a moment. If Kyle Walker, or if Case came to City to replace you, gave you a little phone call, Pablo, and said, how would you recommend I defend against Kylian Mbappe? What would you tell him?
Yeah, I wish I had the pace of Kyle Walker. Against Mbappe, listen, first ball he received, just go and... Tell him. I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here. This is one on one. This is a duel on this area. So I'm gonna be hard on you. And then what? You're gonna let this guy run in behind on get the ball, turn and go one on one against you? No chance. Forget it. Against Mbappe, it's impossible. I know that Matty Cash today did well. This guy had pace and he's so strong and he's been really good. And Mbappe being able to, he managed to score two goals. So at least, I don't know, first ball, just go hard on him and maybe, make it difficult for me. I don't know. That's the only way. That's at some point. I remember playing against those guys. That was the only way for me to at least do something because I never had pace and it was no chance against those players.
It's a quick phone call though, isn't it, really? when Kyle Walker phones you up, Pablo, you just, what any advice for me? You just go like that. Good luck. Put the phone down. Bosh.
Swear to
all the best.
All done. Who have you got going through France, England, Pablo?
What a game that is. I think England got a chance. Squad depth, I think, is England's main strength this World Cup, and I think it's a big chance for this group of players to go far in this World Cup. I'm positive about England.
Oh no!
Oh my God!
Pablo, as always, thank you very much.
The
much
curse.
Appreciated. Be sure to check out Extra Time. Plenty more England questions there. You can see that on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For me, it was done at 1-0.
Again, really, Stevie?
Yeah. The way the US were playing, the way they were giving the ball away, it was a matter of time for me when the second goal was coming because of that.
The Daily Blend goal before the half changed everything.
We walked in the halftime 2-0 down, and it was like, what just happened?
The third goal is crazy. The third goal, there are four defenders in the middle of the park for two Dutch players, and you have the third one, was completely free.
The U.S. wasn't ready for what Holland was bringing to them.
I feel like a lot of people thought this was accessible, but maybe we were overstating that.
I'm kind of flabbergasted, and I don't know if it's like the U.S. soccer community or if it's Muppets who just tune in for the World Cup who, you know, thought that, oh, they should go and beat Holland and view this as some kind of disappointment.
I think we saw the gap in quality, as golden of a generation as this is for the United States.
You saw the difference in the match of how clinical the Dutch were in the final third.
They should have done better in the sense of like understanding where's Holland weak and where are we weak so we don't get exposed.
Louis van Gaal ate Greg Berhalter's lunch.
Van Gaal schooled Berhalter. It was just clever and just fantastic game management.
Van Gaal said it after the game. He said, we were just waiting for them so we could hit them on the break.
Louis van Gaal after the game said, you know, this team didn't adjust. He was very blunt. He was very direct, kind of putting it on Greg Berhalter at the end of the day.
Just a sample of some of the reactions from the show over the last 24 hours. These were the scenes as the Dutch headed back to their team hotel. Louis van Gaal, of course, stealing the show with his fantastic uncle at a wedding dance, you would say, is what it was here, filming everything as it went along. Now, Memphis Depay took to social media to hit back at some Americans, including Charles Barkley, who said that the US were going to whoop the Netherlands behind. Just tidy that up slightly. Obviously, Depay on the score sheet as they won 3-1. These are some of the newspapers from the US, the New York Times, Washington Post, all talking about the US losing against the Dutch. Craig, it's the first time we've been able to have this conversation on the show with you. What did you make of it?
Somebody'd have to tell Charles Barkley what shape a soccer ball is, you know what I mean?
Well, there we go.
You know, he wouldn't be bothering with some of those clueless Americans when it comes to soccer. But I'm not quite buying this, we sucked them in and spat them out sort of rhetoric. The Dutch were poor in possession and that allowed the US to have as much ball as they did. Look, the Pulisic chance could have changed the game,
right,
but it's ifs, buts and maybes. But I do think there was a lot of naivety about the US. Once the Dutch did form their sort of barrier in front and sat a bit deeper, the US just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing. And instead of just taking the stick, you know, it's coming, let's just charge the light brigade. Instead of just taking the sting out of it a little bit and maybe try to draw the Dutch out, it was sort of hell for leather and they got picked apart. Look, Tyler Adams, I don't know if you talked about it, he was jogging back for the goal, the first goal. He's had a great tournament, but he was jogging back as if he was the new greatest midfielder on the planet. You had the two fullbacks from the crosses not picking up. These are basics. These are basics. And when you do that against this Dutch side, who, by the way, were not brilliant, and I told you all about their performance, when Van Gaal made those changes at halftime, even when they're winning, he wasn't happy. But yeah, I think we just saw a naivety from the United States. But I love seeing Van Gaal coming into the hotel like that. Here's a guy in his 70s. He's done it all in the game. He doesn't really have to be there. He either is or has been battling a serious, serious illness. And I think there's a respect and a realisation from him that even he's lightened up as this sort of guy who was very brash and abrupt and it's Louis' way or the highway. Now he's almost like, it's like, God, just being here, a World Cup, healthy, coaching this side, who the hell knows what's going to happen? And I think it's a great attitude to have.
But there's some things, if I may. Yesterday we all agreed that the tactic from the Dutch, the first half, was absolutely perfect. And Van Gaal thought through very well. Well, right. today he said that he wasn't happy with the first half. That, in fact, it's not what he wanted to do. He wanted to do something else. Wanted to have more the position of the ball. It's why for the Argentinian game, you know, I'm still having so much question mark about that Dutch team. I don't know where they're going to go. So far, so good. But I'm not that sure that they really have an option B.
Of course, living here in the States, we're exposed to a lot of pro-USA rhetoric. Were you surprised with the confidence that some people had of the US going into that Dutch side?
Well, I don't know if confidence is the right word, because I was confident they'd put a decent performance on myself, right, having seen both sides play in the competition. Now, we can pick away at the squad and some of his selections. I mean, we can sit on this G Arena sort of talking point, and it is. We can talk about the rotation of the strikers and how that didn't work. Even though he might not be the greatest thing since sliced bread, Ricardo Pepe, he didn't have enough strikers within his camp to make even more changes. So you can pick that apart. I think ultimately they got to where the talent level is.
Right.
I think ultimately that's where they are. Out the group, round of 16, got a bit of a spanking in the end. And I kind of think that's where they are. But the tactics, I mean, it's like saying for England today when we talk about Holland, well, the tactics was to do it. No. Do you think the England tactics was to play badly for 30 minutes and possibly be 2-0 down against Senegal? No. Not at all. That was kind of road your luck. But from a US perspective, I think part of the thing is, and on that early live show today after the game on FC / YouTube, I think it was, saying the same thing, is that unfortunately there are a lot of soccer fans here and it's grown by the day, by the week. And a lot of them are intelligent about the game and they understand. However, there are a lot who are casual fans who are not. And they jump on this good World Cup ship every time it comes along and they listen to the narrative from a US perspective from some, and it's irrational.
Right.
And then when the inevitable comes, oh, we were expecting a lot more. No, you're not at that stage. You're not at that stage.
But Craig, as Pulisic scored the goal,
yeah,
at 1-0, yeah, it would have been a different story, maybe.
Possibly.
So it's about details. It's not all about tactic.
I mean, for example, we have Christian Pulisic, who did have a good World Cup, but effectively he's a squad player. He's a squad player at a club who are not even fighting for the Premier League. You have to have some perspective. You know, Adams had a great World Cup, but he's playing for a club that's fighting relegation in the Premier League. It's hard to step up to, we're talking about England today and we're talking about France, we're talking about Argentina and the Netherlands. Yeah, one or two of them are not the greatest sides in the world, but the players playing for the Barcelonas and all these elite clubs. You know, US have one or two, but they're not at that level. And I think they had a damn good World Cup. And I think the last 16, for me, is where their level is.
And where will that level then take them in 2026? Because the argument is obviously this young group, they're going to be 4 years more advanced, 4 years more mature. Will they be 4 years better?
Well.
Is that even a thing?
Yeah, it's even a thing. I think the question here is like, it's very difficult to look that far ahead. You know, you've got so many permutations. I just mentioned it. Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, two fine young players, but where the hell will Leeds United be? Where will they be? If they get relegated, will they stay there? Probably not. Christian Pulisic, He can't continue to be a bit player. Mm. He has to find his feet somewhere. You know, Tim Ream's not going to be around. You know, Matt Turner, who's been excellent, is he going to still be sitting on his backside at Arsenal as the number two? There are so many questions about where these guys will be playing and how they'll be playing come the next World Cup. I think it's impossible to say, there's my spine, that's it for sure, and we build around everything and that's going to be it. Because for me, so much can change in 6 months or a year. Never mind 4 years.
That's all right. Be American. Be optimistic. It's what they are. That's who they are. You know, it's what, it's part of the genes, you know. When I hear people here, and I always come here, it's optimism.
Right.
We make them be better than the others and believe that they can go so far. I heard Alexis Lalas talking to the goalkeeper, Turner.
Yeah, Matt Turner.
Saying today, do you think you can win the World Cup in 2026? I mean, I say, oh my God, what is he saying right now already? But that's what we are. We can be upset about the American, but we can. You have to respect that they are ready to go very far because of that optimism. Yeah,
unfortunately, there is an obsession over here about winning the World Cup. Now, that's maybe just the mentality of this culture and country. And that's how it is, and I understand that. However, speaking from my own perspective, is we're generally brought up to come and live in the real world. And the real world is that is going to be, not 2026, not happening, but maybe 2046, it's still going to be incredibly difficult. It doesn't matter if you have 350 million population, it doesn't matter. It's so difficult to churn out these fantastically quality players and piece them all together at the one time. You might get them in fits and starts. I mean, you only got to look at Scotland at the moment. For example, they've got two of the finest left-backs in the Premier League in Kieran Tierney and Andrew Robertson. But you're not going to win anything with two excellent left-backs. You need other people. And to do that all at once, ask Belgium. To do it all at once, to fit 8, 9, 10, 12 of them in the one era is difficult.
CONCACAF's an issue as well, isn't it? In the sense, between now and the World Cup, what competitive matches are they going to be, where they're going to be tested?
And CONCACAF, and it's another bugbear of mine, is how people start eulogising and frothing at the mouth over the Gold Cup. It just winds me up, because you have to put a perspective on it. And I understand it's a competition they play over here, right? But you have to put a perspective on it. And quality of opposition is hugely important.
Right.
So who they pick and choose to play when they have time over the next
years. It'll be friendlies, isn't it?
Friendly with the national team.
It's not,
really a friendly. You have to fight for the national team.
Oh, yeah, but we know friendlies. Frank, you've played in friendlies. Craig's played in friendlies.
Yeah, but
you're not the same level as you are.
Yeah, of course, it's not as important as a World Cup final, but it is important. You play for your country. You have to be thankful to be on the field. You know,
there's a million changes in the second half. It's not the same.
But if you play a friendly against France, against England, against Argentina, if you find the schedule for those teams to play against you, that would bring something important to the players, because they're going to get better. Because even maybe France doesn't play, you know, at 100% because it's the US team, you will learn something playing against those teams. And that's going to bring something to you. Even if I don't think, you know, we were horrendous before the World Cup in 98, you know, playing those friendly games, because we're fed up traveling and going anywhere for nothing, because they are friendly games. But we learned how Aimé Jacquet wanted us to work together. And it's never easy to find a group, a squad, where players can stick together and fight for each other.
I don't know what the percentage was within this squad, but bearing in mind that it will be friendlies, as you said, and the odd sort of competition that is sort of a bit powder puff, I think it goes back to the point that the more players they can have in 2026 that have had 3 or 4 years playing at elite level around Europe, whether it's going for Champions League qualification, whether it's going for domestic cups, whether it's fighting relegation, like some of these boys are at Leeds, it's a pressurised situation on a weekly basis, sometimes twice a week. And I think the more they can get overseas playing at elite level, the better state they will be in when they come to this tournament.
Sorry, just 2 seconds. It's true that in 98, I take that example because I've been
yes,
doing that. I know you're bored with that.
Back to 98.
But most players were playing for AC Milan, Juventus, right. Madrid, yeah. Barcelona, Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United, I don't know. All Bayern Munich for Lizarazu, only top teams. So that's a key.
You look right now, Musa, Valencia, McKennie, Juventus will probably change their situation. Tyler Adams, is better than Leeds. The list goes on. Pulisic, Giorena playing in Germany. He's had
and Berhalter, okay?
Yeah, we can nitpick at his mistakes, but I actually think the way that they played and, you know, how he handles his players and I think how they look up to him. We can go out and say, right, get me Pep and get me Jurgen Klopp. They're not coming.
Right.
Unlikely. They're not coming. And, you know, I think how he's gone about it for me, how they've played, taking a disappointment out of it with what he's got. I mean, is anybody really looking to fire the guy after that? Is there?
It's also
not for me.
It's also up to him. You know, according to what Casey said, maybe he wants to have a daily job.
Right.
So will he stay... And will he be there within 4 years? It's not only up to the
But as Gab was saying,
operation.
And we were talking today, and as Gab Mercotti was saying, now's a good time when you've not had a disaster of a World Cup and some of your young players have played pretty well and have caught the eye, to talk about the future for yourself as a manager.
Sure.
And where you might be going, just to bat that ball back into the US's court and saying, are you backing me for 2026 or not? But I get the feeling he'll be in charge.
Just a reminder, a lot more discussion on where it went wrong and right.
His shirt.
What is happening
shirt.
There?
That only went wrong.
Are they breaking up?
What's they wearing?
What is that?
Be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas on Plus. Two more rounds of 16 matches, then we'll see tomorrow. Brazil, massive favourites against South Korea, 9-1 on. Neymar is fit to play. Chiche confirming that today, and you would likely to see the captain return to the starting 11. Meanwhile, slightly closer to call, Japan against Croatia. Croatia, though, favourite to advance to the quarterfinals. Remember, the winner of that will play the winner of the Brazil-South Korea game. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. We'll of course be reflecting on that and looking ahead to those two remaining round of 16 matches.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
FA Cup action then to come on ESPN Plus this week. Replays, of course, Stockport County taking on Charlton, and then it's Gillingham against Dagenham and Redbridge. Be sure to check those out on Wednesday and Thursday. Coverage starts at 2:45 Eastern.
Dagenham Red.
That is it. That brings us to the
end. How much England-France is going to be talked about this week? A lot.
A lot, but it's brilliant, isn't it?
That's it's
what
a great
we want.
Game.
It's what we want in the World Cup.
Yeah.
We want, you know, proper matches.
It's a great
it
game.
Should be,
one of
yous
is going to suffer.
It should be good to watch. Yeah, I know.
I don't care.
Frank is going home. He's going home tomorrow, isn't he?
I might stay a little bit longer.
Be sure to stay tuned then, as extra time is
next. Knock at his door. It's coming home. I'm coming
He's driving you to the airport.
FC Extra Time is brought to you by Globin. Hello and welcome into the studio. Craig with me, as is Frank, who goes back to France tomorrow.
Yes.
Probably for the best for everyone.
He's going home.
Yes, he's going home.
Frenchie's going home.
I know.
Wow. Well, you know.
He's been kicked out, hasn't he?
I think
that's it.
Deported.
Two weeks.
My wife is missing me.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I love that bit.
Well, I believe so.
Has she even called you?
But it doesn't mean anything.
For Craig, England seems to be in control of the games all the time and have been the best at controlling the games. Is it finally coming home?
England have controlled all the games. They certainly didn't control the Senegal game for
the opening
35 minutes. It was certainly not a perfect performance. They could have.
Why did it take the goal to kind of get everything going? Why were they so flat? Why was
it like Holland yesterday?
Yeah.
I think they struggled with the and they made changes at half time. Senegal coach was that there was a lot of, not maybe a lot of quality up front for Senegal, particularly in the wide areas, but a lot of pace.
Right. The energy,
energy, and they just pressured.
There was one on one with Maguire, and the little guy, he was running chocolate. Mm.
But I've never seen a team, I suppose I have, Senegal folded.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah, I'll use the old adage.
But that question.
It folded like a cheap suit.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Yes.
That question is coming home. English people have to be aware that if you beat France, you know, you still have some games after. So.
Oh, yes, and then likely if you look at it, Spain and then Brazil.
So that's the pathway.
Yeah.
France, Spain.
So whoever, France play England, and then whoever wins that, in theory, if everything goes to plan, it'll be Portugal against Spain. So the winner of that will play France or England. Ah. And they're on that side, and then in theory, it'll be a semi-final between Argentina and Brazil.
So in final, it's going to be Brazil, anyway.
Well, it could be Brazil, France.
The other thing is, I know we sat here and talked about, all the boys did for a few days, about Southgate's dilemma, you know, team selection.
Oh, Foden, we talked a lot about that.
Foden, Rashford, Sterling, who has had to go home for now to deal with some private stuff. Mason Mount, I don't think it was a big surprise that Mason Mount didn't start today. Fine player, but hasn't had a fine tournament. Is it a huge debate now about his start?
No. Henderson's been a surprise, hasn't he? The fact that he's featured so heavily in. Clearly so important as well. A leader on the pitch, it seems.
I suppose maybe playing into that is maybe that Calvin Phillips is in so little game time this season. But he's a Trojan, isn't he?
Yes.
Henderson.
Yeah.
This is a player that got basically turned down by Man United because Sir Alex was unsure about his gait and his running. And he's won Premier League, Champions League. He never lets anybody.
And when you have that age and you play alongside Rice, which I think
Rice was excellent,
is an unbelievable player. You know, you know that you can go for it. You will be, you will have somebody to help you out.
You know, Chelsea let him go as a kid.
I know. But they're going to get back. They're going to give him back.
Yeah, but
Mason Mount is pushing.
Not for the same amount, I don't think.
Well, that's okay. We have money. We have an American guy. You know, he's going to put them.
Frank, do you think that France will look to take the initiative to England or sit back and look to hit them on the counter attack?
That's a real possibility, especially because they want to use the pace of Mbappe to go behind maybe Stones or Maguire. So that's going to be, maybe you attract the English team, you let them think that they can lead the game and they can maybe score and open up a little bit and counterattack. But I don't know how England want to play. I don't know what would be a Southgate tactic. That's going to be also a chess game, that's for sure.
Thank God golf season is over.
Oh, why is that, Craig?
Because this game's on Saturday.
Oh, it would interfere with your Saturday morning club.
To be honest with you, it's a real dilemma.
So now the gym season is over. How's the gym working out for you?
It's a slow bomb.
You've never seen Craig. Have you ever seen Craig at the gym?
I tried to go in today. I'm not allowed.
No, I told him. Don't let Frank.
So he goes on the cross trainer.
It's not the epileptic stuff.
Frank, I don't go in the one. I go in the one where the arm doesn't move. It just stays here in the ski.
I love it. Right. It's nice.
Every time, that's the only machine I go.
But he puts the towel over the counter.
Standard.
So he doesn't know, obviously, how long's gone. And just stares at this towel like he hates it more than anything.
I don't listen.
Does he cry, freedom?
He doesn't listen to music, doesn't do it. He just stares at this towel.
No, I'm in the zone.
Are you a strange person? I always thought you were a strange person.
It's scary.
I can't run like 30 seconds if I don't have music.
I know.
No, I did that tonight again. In fact, Sunday, obviously, is doing the show live. There was only one other person in the gymnasium.
Okay.
And he was at the other end on another machine. The tour went over, and I just, for some reason, that's only the third time I've been back in this week after a 2-year sabbatical.
Yes.
From, I would like to say from COVID.
Just me.
Yeah.
And I managed half an hour of staring at the towel.
Yeah, you what do you think of when it's happening?
Well, you don't want to know.
Maybe he doesn't. He's the only human being we're capable of not thinking one thing.
Have you seen Friday the 13th? No, that's Jaws.
Oh, my God.
Don't do that around Stevie, he gets scared.
What's that?
Well, because he watched Jaws before he went on his honeymoon, didn't he, with Eleanor? And then they went to go in the sea, and then they both got scared. They thought they were going to get attacked, and they've never been in the sea since.
Well, he paddles. I'd love.
It's a true story. Yeah.
You have strange people in Scotland.
Very.
I'd love. We know only two, but
imagine
people.
Love just to be in about waist high. Like with a plastic shark.
Yeah, put on your back.
Under the water. And then just see him and he's... Because you'd see him through the water, wouldn't you, with his pale skin.
Yeah.
The sun would be shining on him.
Yes.
And just up you come.
Watch his speedos run.
I mean, he would probably have a heart attack.
Well, I don't know. He's in good condition.
But who watches Jaws and then think... But to be fair, maybe it would scare some people. I know. But not paddling.
Not adults.
Yeah, I get that.
What's the better fit for Bellingham, Real Madrid or Liverpool?
Real Madrid.
But do they need him? That's the
Liverpool,
problem. That's the
thing, Liverpool have a... I mean, it's a terrific club. Liverpool have a structure. They may have broken that for Salah. They have a structure. I don't know. There is an allure.
Right,
you have Camavinga and Tchouaméni already in Real Madrid.
Yes. Probably Mbappe. Probably at some point.
Well, Mbappe at some stage, you imagine, maybe. Yeah.
So I think, well, you know, I don't know. I think he will have the choice of the king, as we say.
Yes.
He can choose whatever he wants. I think everybody's going to be happy to have him.
19, Frank.
Yeah, but he's saying, well, we know that for like 10 years.
Yeah.
If he has no injury, the guy's going to be the top of the top. So if you have to put 100 million, yeah, do that on
sure.
him.
Yeah,
well, for sure.
Frank, how do England stop Mbappe? Pablo Zabaleta was on the show and he said, kick him.
Yeah, well, you know.
Early on in the game.
Yeah, you have to be, you know, some dirty words as well. You know, a young guy, if you want to finish your career and you want to finish the World Cup, go on the other side.
Does that make a difference, though? That sort of thing.
It happened to me a couple of times with young players when I was saying, you know what, I'm going to kick you, What sort of players
did you talk to like that?
I won't say, but...
No, you can say.
No, I won't say.
No one's watching.
I said, you know what, I'm not going to finish the game, but... You won't finish the game as well.
But do you think that made a difference?
Yeah, they went to the other side.
Mbappe's not going to go on the other side, is it?
Yeah, first tackle, if you make a first tackle, you know, and a bad one,
right.
Yeah, I can tell you, he's going to go on the other side. But all players, they're going to go like that. That's not nice. I'm not saying that's what you have to do. And it's nice that now you have VAR and you can have, you know...
Yeah, but VAR can't hear what you're saying.
No. But according to Pablo, it's not only about what you are saying, it's about what you're doing. But that's what we used to do.
Right.
I don't think it's... I think it's hard to do the same thing. Again, you have to be very close to him. And make sure that your teammate covers you.
Right.
In case he turns.
I'd be in the tunnel. You're a big baby.
Yeah.
You'd never win anything at PSG. You win the French title, won't you? But you'll never win the Champions League because nobody cares. I do anything.
Would you really?
Oh no, I'd go like that to him. I'd go, hey, I'm
But we see none of that in the tunnel these days.
It's not part of the new generation.
Look, you cannot manhandle a player in the manner in which you used to.
Yeah.
Right? You can still get away with the odd thing, but you can't, it's not, you know, Pablo Zabaleta.
Yes.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Tongue in cheek. So you've got to find a way to get him off his game. Continuous.
Yeah.
Now, you're right though. I'm not sure that player is out there now.
Well, we obviously see the dressing room, not dressing room cams, but the tunnel cams, and everyone's very friendly.
Hands.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm under his skin.
Right.
I'm trying to get under his skin. I'm trying to put him off his game. I'm trying to make him.
Yeah.
And then see what happens.
Saw during today's match that Koundé had to take off his gold chains at the 41st minute.
Wow.
Were you guys allowed to wear jewellery during matches? And what did you wear other than Frank's earrings?
They made me take my teeth out.
I was going to say, was there ever a stage that you went out with your teeth on?
Yes, but they never made me take them out. I took them out before I choked.
Right.
Used to tape up the rings all the time.
Yeah, okay, you got to.
And I'm not really one for jewellery, but I did see that early on in the game when he was taking a throw in. It was about 10 minutes in, Jules Koundé, and his chain had come out and he popped it back and he shot it.
Right.
I'm going, how the hell did
he? So did you ring FIFA and grass on him?
No, but I don't see the point, really. Yeah. You know, you have to stop the game for like a minute for the guy who has a chain where he cannot strangle anybody with that. You know, he's not going to injure anybody with that.
But I think it's because if somebody grabs it.
Yeah, if someone grabs
it. Well, that's his own problem. If he loses it, you know, that's his own problem. He should have put it in there.
What did you do with your jewelry? Because did you have your earrings to help your balance or your sight?
I didn't have an earring. I didn't have anything. I had, like you, my wedding ring.
Right.
So you had to tape it.
Yes.
And that's it. No, I didn't have anything.
Tape top the wedding ring.
For Craig, what was Frank's English like in your Chelsea days?
Very similar.
Did you speak any English before you went to London?
No.
I don't remember.
Well,
I thought you spoke.
I studied at school.
Right.
And the first time I heard him, or Dennis Wise.
Yes.
Scottish.
Steve Cockney, Clark.
Steve Clark. Even the doc, Barnes. What his name? What was his name? Mike.
Mike Banks.
The doc. He was from Birmingham.
Physio.
Right.
The physio.
Wow.
Oh, he's a Brummie.
There's a lot of strong
accents. I couldn't understand a word of what he was saying. And I turned to the physio and I said, sorry, is he speaking English to me?
Right.
And the accent were terrible for me to understand. And on top of it, they weren't making any effort, you know.
No.
Kevin Hitchcock was coming to me saying, hey, Frank, can I use your dog and bone? That's the fun for the Cockney.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's crazy. Oh, yesterday I went to the tank. That was the bank.
Right.
They don't care.
So how did you learn? Did you have classes?
No, I had one lesson that I say was boring. I watched TV a lot. You know, at the time we didn't have the subtext. We had the teletext.
Yeah, so 888.
Exactly. And I was watching all movies like that. And I was reading a decent newspaper. No tabloids. Not too much. Not too big. It was a Daily Mail.
I think the best.
Well, I think people question if that's a decent newspaper.
Yeah, but for me it was easy to understand. It wasn't not as trashy as the tabloids.
Well, yes.
Yeah. I think the one.
I don't have the page three.
Jean-Luc.
Well,
I'm not involved in this conversation. Jean-Luc, I struggled to start with.
Gianfranco as well.
Gianfranco struggled. So Luca Vialli struggled.
Right.
Zola struggled.
No, yes.
Di Matteo was very good.
Roberto Di Matteo was very good because he was born in Switzerland. Mm, and so he learned English.
He was speaking German too. So he's white.
And he's a clever guy.
Yeah, clever guy, yeah.
But yeah, Ruud Gullit.
Doesn't mean that the other are not clever.
Ruud Gullit spoke good English when he came in.
He's Dutch.
Dimitri Karim was a big struggle coming from Russia, as you would expect.
Yeah.
And Kuhn. I remember they couldn't get used to the exchange, and he went, and in Russia at the time, inflation, I believe, was like through the roof, through the roof. And Demi went in with his wife to the supermarket, I think it was all Gerrard's Cross, Beaconsfield in Buckinghamshire, and he had about £5,000 in cash on him. and he had like his shopping trolley filled with groceries, and he's going, enough?
Yes, for a year.
Yeah, that's plenty.
I mean, that must have been difficult.
Now it is difficult, but it's okay. You know, it's learning a language allows you to understand better another culture as well.
Yeah.
And you can make the comparison between the Scottish, the English, and the Americans.
How long did you spend in England?
5 years.
How long did you spend in Spain?
Cinco años.
5 years.
I know where this is going.
Yeah.
5 years. But I didn't have a drive. I didn't know.
I work with the time.
No. You said one thing that doesn't apply to him.
Culture.
No, but when you speak English and you know that you can speak English almost everywhere in the world, why do you want to make an effort about that? That's the thing. French people 200 years ago was maybe interesting to speak French,
right.
But it's not the case anymore. So if you want to travel the world, you have to learn English.
Yeah,
you come out of that dressing room had Russians.
17 different nationalities.
Norwegians,
really?
Norwegians, Danes, Italians, Romanian, Dan Petrescu, everyone. Scotch, Welsh, Jersey.
First year, 17 different nationalities.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was
great. Jacob Kjellberg there?
No.
Okay.
All right, and
final questions. If France beat England, will Dan wear one of Frank's turtlenecks?
No.
And if England beats France, will Frank wear shorts at a restaurant?
Well, we didn't make a bet, but maybe. But I have to say that, remember, I don't know if it was you talking about that. We asked, you know, the viewers, you know, what they thought about my turtlenecks and everything, the way I dressed.
And what did the viewers say?
Everybody was very happy. Kay Murray told me that none of the group said that I was.
I wouldn't believe a word that
dressed.
Kay was saying. She's a Why? Lovely lady. She's going to say nice things.
So she's going to lie to me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to tell her that you think that Kay.
That's all right.
We're
going to have a dinner with Kay tonight.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a dinner with Kay. Are you coming for the dinner?
Plus, I'm busy. Plus, we only have one viewer, so it's not really a, you know, it's not really a...
Only one viewer we have?
I believe tonight,
that's
tonight,
okay, whatever.
If England beat France, you got to do this show in a onesie.
Why?
Because you're so negative.
No, I don't have to do anything. In a onesie? What sort of onesie?
What is a onesie?
Why do you want to see me in a onesie, Greg Burley?
What is a onesie?
You want to look like a bigger Muppet than you are. You're so negative for this England
Saturday.
Team.
We love each other.
I'm off.
That's going to be the last sentence of the
What are you talking about?
No, because people are so mean to each other here.
Where?
In the studio. Where? I know, you just said you're so... What did you say? You just say to him that he was such a what?
A negative Muppet.
That's very nice. Nice. That's a compliment. You're a Muppet.
Thank you very much.
It seems to be a compliment, hey, you know. Right. Everybody hates.
Told he's a fast man.
Yeah, indeed.
You know, you're roast beef.
I'm roast beef.
Roast beef. English people are called roast beef. You call us frogs.
Yes.
We call you roast beef.
Okay.
Because you get red under the sun, like a roast beef. Bloody roast beef.
When's his flight?
Tomorrow.
But you'll be coming on from Paris, yes?
Yes.
It'll be exciting. Yes. Until France get knocked out on Saturday. And that's it. There's George.
We'll see.
Steve, the shark. Feel that?
That's because of this movie that everybody's scared
of boat.
Shark.
I think they went out on a boat and then they got scared and took the boat back because they worried that the shark was going to attack.
Unbelievable.
Can you imagine? Him on a boat, in charge of the boat.
I know.
Oh, as long as you got on that, it's going to be all right.
Would you get on that boat?
We did the boat race, didn't we, in Madrid?
With Gab in the back when the boat was like that. The boat was like, was it Concord?
Oh, right, that is it. We got dinner. ESPN FC is back on your screens tomorrow. We'll be reflecting Brazil, of course, in action. Plus, it's Croatia against Japan.
Yes.
Elitist, Dan.